Welcome to Ever Beyond.
Beyond. Beyond. Beyond. Beyond. Beyond. Beyond. Beyond.
On Wolf Spirit Radio, Ever Beyond Radio, and Tir na Sao in Ireland. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond.
Beyond.
Please join us in the chat room at www.wolfspiritradio.com/listen. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. You're listening to JP. Yeah, that's me. It's Ever Beyond Radio, broadcasting through the portal of Wolf Spirit Radio. I am joined tonight by an old friend, Tolek from Dakota. So let's just pick up the threads and hit the ground running, shall we? There's a lot going on above, below the surface, on the surface, in outer space, in inner space. What news have you of the progress of all this? It's a big story. I know. Where do you want to start?
How about if we reflect back a few years when I was telling people what would be coming?
Yes. Now, meanwhile,
your fairy godmother.
Yeah, yeah. This is my way back. It's my time machine.
Okay, time machine. And I believe that I said to people that the things that they would see happening on this planet, they would not expect to be seeing. There are, of course, social changes, geopolitical changes, including here in this country. And so I'll address at least one of these things that I mentioned at least 2.5 years ago, maybe 2 years ago, when I was speaking with my primary contact person, the gentleman who's the commander of the Primary Andromeda Council Biosphere, and I was asking him about what was then the upcoming election that just took place here in the States. And I asked him about the current president, Barack Obama, and what would we likely see transpiring in the future, in the very near term future, after this 2016 election. And I'm going to paraphrase what he said to me. What he essentially said to me and what he showed me was the fact that this election and the person being elected would be like no other person ever before holding office. And even more specifically, he said, this election would be the last time that it would seem to be business as normal. Which means to say that Obama would be the last president elected of the United States as we knew it in 2014, 15, and 16. Because what was coming in 2016 was going to be so different than anything we experienced before. It would radically change the nature of this country and its processes. So well,
that sounds about right, doesn't it?
Yeah, and now we come forward to 2016, and what has happened is that a man who is named Donald Trump, who was a developer and a millionaire, billionaire, and he's done a whole bunch of things, happened to throw on the pin of the Republican Party. But he's actually just a businessman. He knows how to run businesses or has started a number of successful businesses. And like a lot of guys, they go from one to the another, to another, and they leverage one business off of another. But long story short, he's primarily a businessman who's thrown on the badge of a Republican. He's not a politician. That's the exact point that I'm making. And as a result, the kind of changes that we're going to see in this country that he will achieve, he will initiate and achieve, will radically change the face of this country as we know it. And of course, there will be a ripple effect, you know, as you and I have talked about, and as others have talked about, this country called the United States of America, 200 plus years old, is in its latter stages of life. This is the beginning of the fall of, parenthetically, the Roman Empire. And so here we go with this gentleman that was elected, or rather maybe appointed, who's not of the political process. He's not a politician. And yet he was allowed to take office. Something else that's important to note is that because he was allowed to take office, it means that all the people that have been controlling things for hundreds, maybe thousands of years, in the shadows, in the dark, the people at the upper part of the power pyramid across the world, that they are in fact, and have in fact, lost control of the power on this planet. That's most importantly, that's what it means.
So
because had they still in, let me try this again, had they still been in control, Hillary was the appointee. Hillary Clinton was the appointee. She was supposed to be president next. And Trump was allowed to take power. It's very significant. Now, why is this all relevant? Well, it's relevant because, as I've talked about over the course of many years, there's going to be a period of radical change, social change, political change, earth changes, as we've seen, and will continue. This is part of all of the change that's happening as a lead up toward the higher dimensional shift of this world and our people. That's why it's relevant. So we're in it. We are smack dab in the middle, maybe the early middle part of the transition of this world. And this is a big indicator, having Trump take power, be appointed, put in place, whatever word you want to use, is a big, big shift. Thoughts? Comments?
I have, thoughts? Yeah, plenty. comments? there seems to have been more of a spook war about this year than anywhere else. And I feel that the whole Brexit, Trump thing, because they're both expressions of somehow the people in their large quantities are saying, we don't agree with this and we want something different. You know?
Yes.
Now,
yes.
Wasn't there a 13th Amendment, if I should remember correctly, about your constitution, that lawyers are not supposed to be politicians? And yet for the last God knows how many, there's been, well, they're all lawyers and they're all like, what are they, blackballed, aren't they? They're all completely, they've all been stripped of their law qualifications.
For the lawyers, the lawyers are officers of whatever court, of whatever state they happen to be a citizen of. So they are part and parcel, representatives of the government, even though they take an oath to, quote unquote, defend their client to the best of their ability.
And the government,
you know, charge.
Yeah, and the government is owned by a bank. So it all comes back to the banks. And it all comes back, and the banks are all owned by the Vatican. And the Vatican's owned by the black nobility. And the black nobility.
All the way up the Jesuit tree.
Until we get to the Archons and the Reptilians somewhere.
Right. That's right.
They're all runs on the same ladder.
Right. Good expression. And so instead of having a coin with one side being Democrat and one side being Democrat and the other side of the coin being Republican, two sides of the same coin, we really have a guy from the outside who's a businessman who decided to put a pin on that says Republican because politically it's likely he couldn't, for lack of better words, win as an independent. But it's, you know, this may not be thought of as a cosmic or galactic discussion point because it's pivotal. It's pivotal in the history of this country that never before has, in recent history, given how this country has been operated, has a man outside of the political system who's not a lawyer, who's not a governor, who's not a senator, albeit a one-term senator, like Barack Obama. He's a business guy.
Well, it's a business model.
Yep.
The United States is a corporation, isn't it? The United States of America, I think. And there is another.
All capital letters.
Yeah, that whole thing. And that's what is, you know, the president. So I'd say it was entirely fitting, again, that it's appropriate for a change that there is a businessman running the business of America. The thing is, it really should be an administration. It just doesn't need to govern, doesn't need to direct.
That's right.
Just needs to allow people to do what they do and facilitate that and then make it easy for them to trade internationally by conglomerating as a body. Anything wrong with that? What could go wrong?
Well, there are a lot of old systems that are going to need to be tossed out. And I can tell you categorically there's some big changes coming in this country in the next 6 to 8 months and beyond that in terms of how we function, how things get done. And Mr. Trump's going to be initiating those changes, believe me. Interestingly enough, I heard, as I was moving my way up to the Sci-Fi Channel a couple of days ago, I heard someone in one of the news stations go, and Mr. Trump is putting in place people as someone in a meritocracy would. I'm like, somebody's finally catching on. Put intelligent people in place who know how to run different operations or who know how to administrate.
That's right.
It's going to be interesting.
Administration.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very, right.
That's what I'm after. I mean, it's jokingly called the administration. Well, it used to be. I remember people.
Well, it used to be.
The Nixon administration, the Carter administration. And now it's like the Obama government, isn't it? Interesting.
Well, keep
in
mind. It's
like when the policeman went from blue to black.
Keep in mind, things were getting bad post-World War II with Eisenhower and then Kennedy. And they both warned of a military-industrial complex. And this is where Jim Nichols would jump in and have all sorts of comments because it's an area he loves to research. So we've not only had a military-industrial complex running things for years, we've had a military-industrial media complex. News, radio, television, the healthcare industry with its insidious programming on television over and over and over again. And since the advent of the murder of JFK, every single president since JFK has been appointed. And I know we talked about this before, but that essentially means every single election since the murder of JFK has been fraud. Just theater, stage.
Run by the mafia.
That's right. Yeah, whichever mafia you want to put a label on.
Again, the mafia is one of those rungs of that, you know, the dark side's ladder, as I referred to earlier. You know, it doesn't really matter which rung they're out on because they're all on the ladder. You know, it really doesn't matter. So, you know, but I think the thing is also to be not freaked out by the fact that there is this, you know, ladder to hell, let's say, and just take it as an is and just make sure that you don't start walking up it. or down it.
Mm.
You know? Because you know where it leads. So.
Lots of change. Lots of change coming.
Hey, tell us about, I want to hear about what happened at your conference. I've had all sorts of, you know.
It was amazing.
Yeah, please tell us, you know, what was your experience of it?
It was amazing. I'm going to get some more help next time.
Oh yeah, really? You didn't do it all on your own, did you?
Oh man. Honestly, I didn't. To their credit, the volunteers were great. The speakers were amazing. My number one person who was at my side almost for 5 months leading up to this conference and during the conference, she said to me, "Hey, guess what?" She was giving me a final count. She said, "Between the speakers, the attendees of the conference, and the volunteers, we had just short of 180 people show up." And I know that as late as Sunday afternoon, I was sitting somewhere in the second row, and I turned around. Michael Brown from Sedona was speaking. Brilliant man, great storyteller. He has regressed thousands of people over the past 12 years. He lives in Sedona. And he was telling a couple of stories about some clients that he has who are people, who are beings, that are living Earth-human lives, but clearly have memory, very clear memory, actually, of who they are, what star system they come from, what dimension they're in, what it's like to live the lives that they are living. So I was enthralled by Michael's story. I was listening and turned around for a moment. And at, I think it was 4:15 on Sunday afternoon, the whole hall was still full of people. The place was still full Sunday afternoon at 4:15. And the conference was scheduled to end at 5:30. So that's indicative of how good of a conference it was. All the speakers were fantastic. They were engaging. We had at least 4 or 5 Native American wisdom keepers. Pete Jackson from the Pima Gila River Indian community, Grandmother Silver Star, Kathy Wilkitz from the Cheyenne River Reservation, who's Lakota, and a couple of others. Yukwala, Havasupai, the blue-green people of the blue-green water of the Grand Canyon. They were all there, not only speaking, but holding Native American ceremony to open the conference and close it. There were moments where you could hear a pin drop in the hall. It was pretty amazing. So, I've gotten notes. I've received thank yous, have received testimonials, which are on the Transformational Shift Events website that people can read. But I'm very happy for a first major conference production with 16 speakers, including myself. I'm really, really happy. And of course it didn't go according to script, but that's okay. It was an amazing event, and I think people enjoyed themselves.
And, what was the pinnacle moment? What was that thing when you finally, I mean, cause there's always a point when it's like, it's rolling. You know, that you know it's rolling and all of the anticipation is now over because it's rolling. How did that feel for you?
Boy, there are a few moments. One of them was on Friday evening when, Grandmother Silver Star was going to speak. And also it was just before Pete Jackson spoke from the Gila River community. What a wise elder. There were so many moments. I was just astounded at just the incredible knowledge and depth of wisdom coming out of these Native American teachers. But there was a moment where I had to get up to the podium and say something, and I just stood there and I looked at this whole hall full of people, And it just gave me pause that all of these people would show up because I had faith that the speakers that were going to be coming here were of the highest integrity, that they would likely bring the greatest wisdom and the greatest light. And so that was my intention from the start. And so as I looked out at this whole hall full of people, I said, you know, before we get this next segment started, having personally taken in the reservations and knowing that there are people from not only across this country, but across the world, would you mind standing up and telling everybody else who you are and where you're from? I said, those of you who are international, raise your hands. So there were at least three or four sets of hands that went up. We had people from England, people from British Columbia, Vancouver, BC. There was a couple, Daniel and Sherry from Australia, that had never left their country, that were here in the States for the first time because of this conference. There was a guy from Italy, a couple, he and his wife. There were people from Chicago, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Oregon, Ohio, California. So as these international people stood up and they introduced themselves and everybody in the crowd gave them a round of applause, that was probably the most poignant moment that I was able to in my very first conference, pull in people from not only across the U.S., but from different points around the globe. It was humbling. It was very gratifying, but it was really, really humbling that all these people would show up. There were so many moments where I just looked out and went, wow, is this really happening?
Yeah. I ask you this because I'm probably going to be doing the same sort of thing maybe next year or the year after, you know, having organized, because I used to organize gigs for my band and it's nothing different. You know, it's just that people are sitting down and not singing, and it's much easier to handle. Well, usually.
Yeah, well.
You know, usually, because normally they're not drunk or high on something, you know, when, you know, speakers are normally straight edge, which makes them really, really much easier to handle, usually.
And there were, there were some, you know, given the focus and intention that I had in terms of the kind of conference I wanted to produce. As a result, there were some very, as we might say, awake, aware, very spiritually, for lack of better words, very spiritually aware people asking some very intelligent questions. So the level of conversation that was happening throughout the conference and the questions that were being asked, we had two panel discussions, one on Saturday and one on Sunday. And so there were upwards of between 5 to 8 of us sitting up on stage in very comfortable lounge chairs with some tables and some glasses of water. And we let the audience have at us for about 2 hours. And the second day, we were at the peak of conversation. We only had like 10 minutes left. So I asked the audience, I'm like, you guys are clearly enjoying this. Do you want this to go longer? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Keep it going. So we went. That's why I said, you know, we had a schedule, but it went out the door and we talked for another 45 minutes. Those sessions were amazing because we had a couple of speakers that, were of the ilk that demand to have proof that things are not as good as they seem. And there were some other opinions expressed by the panel members. And as I stood there at the lectern, quasi-moderating but not saying much, just sort of watching what was going on, I knew that I had brought in such a high level of people as panelists, as speakers, that whatever was going to happen, they would honor and respect each other, even when there were differences of opinion that came out. And that's exactly what happened. Everybody responded to each other with respect, with honor, with dignity. Nobody attacked each other, even when there were differences of opinion. And there were, and actually when there were differences of opinion, there were a couple of the speakers, Jenny Marks and Alexander Metters, who I know you've talked to, and they both brought up valid points that people might not have thought of, even when there was some dissension. So it went really well. It went really, really well overall.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Apparently you didn't say very much during the whole thing, so keep going.
I didn't. No.
You know, now's your opportunity to kind of debrief. Oh, well. Is why, because, you know, there's probably very few people you could talk to that would, you know, apart from everybody here.
Yeah.
Who would kind of understand it. But, you know, it's really good to hear, like, the backstage feelings of things. You know, it's always good to have that.
It was profound. It was a really profound experience. There's a young woman who spoke, Yvonne Palermo. And she's a young woman who in, I believe it was 2011, Jim Nichols, and her share a radio show. And they've been friends probably for a year and some change now. Yvonne went through a life-changing experience. I believe it was in 2011 sometime. And she was involved in a horrific car accident. So as a result, the body she's using, the Yvonne Palermo body, is full of pins and tubes and bars. And the soul that was in her body could not continue. It wasn't strong enough to keep this body going. So she's a walk-in. And yet she's not a pure walk-in because some portion of her original soul that's in that body and the new soul that came in had to braid with each other in order so that there could be some completion of this woman's, the first part of her life. The reason for the story is the following. Yvonne, like a lot of people in this day and age, comes from a family that's no longer together. Her mom and dad divorced years ago. And in this one conference, this one occasion, her father flew in from one state across the country. Her mother flew in from another state, wholly across the country. And together, those parents watched their daughter on stage in public for the first time at a large event with a hall full of almost 200 people. There was a lot of crying going on and a lot of healing going on for Yvonne and her family. And the people in the room knew what was going on. They could feel it and sense it. And I didn't know this was going to be happening. Jim let me know that her father was going to likely come, but I didn't know that all of these pieces were coming together. And so it was not only a conference that reunited a number of people that have been friends and have been involved in MUFON and other contact and extraterrestrial and UFO organizations in the past, connected with Phoenix people. There were some old friends that got together for years. There are people that came in from across the world and across the country, but there was also this incredible healing that took place in Yvonne's life. And her, and from what I understand, it's a new sense of healing and cohesion for that family that hasn't existed in a long time. So yeah, another profound moment.
Good gig. Good,
yeah,
gig,
so
late. It's a nice one.
It's intense. when I think about all the things that happened, it's pretty intense. For me personally, the most, I guess, personally rewarding moments were at the beginning of, the very beginning of the conference when I introduced all the Native American speakers. My adopted sister Adana and I presented medicine bundles, which are specific to the Native American community, to all of the Native American speakers. And we also gave them, Adana makes these, Native American inspired wands, which have double terminated crystals in them and used to balance, the body, the human body. Long story short, we presented these gifts to these Native American speakers. And they held ceremony to begin the conference. You could hear a pin drop in the place. At the end of the conference, and we're coming full circle, Friday afternoon after Michael Brown finished speaking, Kathy Wilkitz, a Ukwala, Grandmother Silver Star, Pete Jackson, I believe, they were all there for the closing ceremony. And there was a medicine wheel that had been unfurled that was laying on the floor. All of the conference attendees on their own took all the chairs, put all the chairs in a circle. So we had this circle about 40 feet in diameter, 40 or 50 feet in diameter, and all of the close to 200 people around the chairs in this ceremony, listening as Kathy Wilkitz provided the closing words and Grandmother Silver Star provided the closing words for the ceremony. Those were the two most profound moments for me. Just, very touching, very, very blessed. It's the best words I can think of. And I don't think I slept much for like the next three or four nights and then I collapsed.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause there's an energy thing going on, you know,
yes,
it's a gathering of energy and, I think this is why a lot of musicians and things, turn to alcohol and sleeping pills is because you come off stage, you know, I've certainly done it. You come off stage and you're like, rah, I could do about another 9 gigs right now.
Right.
You know, you get, cause there's energy when people pay you attention. It's, you know, you get attention, you know, you get a lot of it. And, if you haven't got anywhere for it to go, you know, it can just kind of keep your head buzzing for a few hours.
I didn't have any physical release. For this body, my physical release for the course of most of my life has been playing tennis or running on the beach or something. But all I was doing was running from person to person, answering questions, getting things done, speaking with the hotel, you know, if you will, conference meeting planner, administrator, speaking with the banquet people. I needed somebody who was an administrator next to me to go get all that stuff done so I could have had more quality time with the attendees of the conference.
Yeah. So that's what you're going to, you know, and I know what kind of guy you are. And so the next time you do it, that's exactly how it's going to be, isn't it?
That's right.
You know, you're the kind of guy that would be able to map everything that went, you know, that took up your time and then delegate it. Cause I know that's how you are.
Yeah. I could, but not having done this.
I know. You have to do it.
Scale. Yeah.
You have to do it. And then you can. Go on.
I saw some photos of me after the conference was over and was like, oh boy. Cause I looked like I hadn't slept in 4 nights. Well,
it was
the reality is I had been preparing for 6 months. And all of the planning, the website building, collecting the tickets, the constant marketing, the constant promoting between Cheyenne and I, Cheyenne Stone, she and I did 95% of the work in terms of the conference preparation. And it was having never done it before, I wanted to make sure that I got it right. And so I basically, other than occasional interviews, I ate, slept, and breathed the preparation of this conference to get it right. It's a lot easier. Now, right now I'm preparing for 2 other conferences, Hawaii and Australia. And actually after that, I'll be doing a 1-day event in Japan and then a 1-day event in Portland, Oregon. But we've got this conference coming up in Australia, down under, May the 5th through the 7th and one in Hawaii, what we know as Memorial Day weekend, May the 25th through the 31st. So I'm back in the saddle.
Wow. It sounds like you got the taste for it.
I think it's probably for me the next logical step to not only speak at conferences, but produce conferences that bring together the kind of people, of speakers that I feel that I think are of the highest integrity, that have the most to offer, people who are awake, people who are awakening, people who want to learn, The one in Hawaii, we're calling it a spiritual sky star journey and retreat vacation. It's going to be approximately 5 days or so and less intense. We're not going to have as many speakers packed into 3 days. We're going to spread it out. We're going to have more interactive sessions between the speakers and the attendees. This one in Hawaii will probably get 44 or 45 people. The one in Australia, it'll be a full-blown conference. 3 days, Alexander Metters, Jenny Marks, Michael Sala, Tracy Anderson. She'll be our version of the Native American. She's going to be she's from the Baripi tribe. She's an Aboriginal elder. So whereas here we would have Comanches, Apaches, Cherokees, Lakota, she's Baripi, and she will speak of her people's knowledge of star people and sacred wisdom. Santos Bonacci is going to be speaking. Mary Rodwell, Robin Sherrick. So I've got some of the top Australian names as well as some of the Yanks going down. So that'll be a full-blown conference.
Excellent. And you're going to bring your flute.
I'm going to bring my flute. That's right. When the didgeridoo guy is going, I'm going to play my flute somewhere in there. So yeah, my flutes are going to travel with me first to Australia, then to Hawaii. Then I'll be speaking in Tokyo for a 1 day event, probably the end of the first week of June, and then back to the States in Portland, Oregon. Then I think I'll sleep for 2 weeks.
It sounds like you're going to be like periods of incredible mania followed by long periods of sleep.
Yeah.
Wow.
But thank you for asking me, and thanks for asking about the sort of the backstory. As a conference, I'm happy to say that I think it was everything that I wanted it to be for the people who attended. And I've got either 5 or 6 testimonials on the Transformational Shift Events website, and people were very, very gracious in their thanks about what they experienced at the conference. So I'm a blessed man. I'm really blessed that it went as well as it did.
Are you still high from it? You still have this unconditional goodwill to all humans, insects, blades of grass, you know, the whole thing.
No, there's a loaded question. Because after the conference, I stayed in Tucson for 3 days to wrap things up. I went to Sedona for about 4 or 5 days to visit with some friends I hadn't seen in a while. Then came back to Tucson. My adopted sister Adana and I caught a train, and we went from Tucson to Alpine, Texas, visited with some friends there who had a baby a couple years ago we hadn't seen, spent a couple days with them. Then continued on the train and ended up in Houston. So I only got back here about a week ago. I just got back. And I think the first 3 nights I slept pretty deeply. I don't even remember sleeping. It was like... So now I'm deep in the work of preparing for the Australia conference, the Hawaii conference, the 1 day Japan event, because they're clustered together between May of June and next year. I've got a lot of work to do because, you know, we've got, as you know, we have this dead time between now and January 4th or 5th. This is a great time for me to prepare. So I'm working like a dog. That's what I'm doing.
Oh, that's well.
But I did.
I'm feeling tired just hearing this story.
If I showed you those photos of what I looked like after the conference, it looked like somebody been dragged around the back of the barn and beat up.
You should have worn a hood and gone around the Emperor from Star Wars.
Right.
Good anyway, yeah.
I did. I was fortunate enough to be in Houston during the time when the movie Arrival had just come out. So I looked at my adopted sister and said, "Are you going to see this movie?" She's like, "Hell yeah." So we watched the movie Arrival in this monster theater. And if you haven't seen it, for anybody who's out there listening, go see the movie. There are some incredible moments in that movie and in some incredible synchronicities. I will say at least this much. I'll say two things about this movie. One, the beings that come from wherever they come from arrive in ships. So I'm going to actually say three things. Beings that come from wherever they come from, they arrive in ships that when you take the movie poster and you turn it on its side, it's shaped just like a UFO. But they've got these craft standing on end. That's A. B, the number of ships that they don't land, they end up hovering about 30 or 40 feet over the ground. There are 12 of them. 12. So I went, how many Andromeda Council biospheres are there? 12. Like, you know what? Whoever was making this movie, they're paying attention. And finally, and these are not in any order, the beings, when they communicate with humans, they use symbols. They have a way of producing these symbols, but they use symbols. And they also communicate through nudging, telepathic method messages. I went, how does higher dimensional communication take place? Images, symbology, telepathic communication. The people making this movie are paying attention.
They get,
now, that's not all of it.
Yeah, they get
that's
it.
That's not all of it. Those are three major points. It's worth seeing.
Okay. Some good data points in there.
Yes. Yes.
All right.
Absolutely.
So shoehorning into this, into this moment.
Yes.
One of the, attendees is a Facebook friend of mine. She had a great time and she asks me to ask you about Itasha Tashina. And the flying saucer patent, personal spaceship should be available in 2 years. Tell me that this is real.
Yeah, Tashina said on stage that she is working with some scientists to produce a flying saucer using technologies that are not of this planet. And she is hoping to have this produced within 2 years and she wants to patent it. Now, I personally think attempting to patent it is a mistake because anytime you try to submit information in the form of a patent, it goes to somebody called the government. And that's
namely Hillary Clinton was a, I don't want to bring her up, but I just did. She was a patent lawyer. That's how she makes her money. And so she knows about everything before it's created or before it's manufactured. And if you do that, you can perform magical feats, can't you? Anyway, meanwhile, back at personal spaceships. Yeah. So, what's the drive? What kind of drive? I'm sorry. I'm just being
technical. I don't know. I didn't ask her. I didn't know about this. Yeah. We didn't get into it on stage, but,
all right.
There have been a lot of people
on the show. Yeah, blimey. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the people writing to me have asked about when are the people from the four Andromeda-aligned planets going to start coming to visit our world? When will we see Ambassador Tanka and Diplomat Maka? When? When all along we, in fact, already have people who are human that are walking among us. And Itasha Tashina, by all external appearances, and actually genetically as well, she is human. Now, she's not Earth human. She's from the Arcturus star system. Her physiology is different than ours. Certain parts of her body are located in places we wouldn't expect. And this is all public information that she's already spoken about, so I feel comfortable repeating it. She had specific genetic testing done against the known, I'm not a scientist, so bear with me, against the known gene pool of human markers on this planet. And 80% of what she has does not match. There are no markers for her gene type.
So she arrived here, yeah?
She arrived here. Right.
And
as a young child, I don't know exactly uh-huh. when, but
very interesting.
And there's another one, Jerry Wills. Jerry Wills is from the Tau Ceti star system. He was dropped off here. Again, human. So my point is, we already have. And as a matter of fact, I asked the question of Tashin one time. I said, you know, as you go to all these different conferences, Star Knowledge or otherwise, and you're speaking, are you running into people that we on this planet would consider to be extraterrestrial? And she's like, oh, yes, Tolik. They're here by the thousands already. But because there's some iteration of cosmic human, There was a guy that wrote to me yesterday. He was, to say that he was, beside himself would be accurate. He's like, Tolik, I was at this grocery store the other day and I saw this woman with somewhat darker skin and she was like 7'6" with blonde, wavy, curly hair. I said, 7'6"? He says, yeah, 7'6". He said, you know, the freezers, the tall stainless steel freezers are almost 7 feet tall. This woman towered over the stand-up freezers. He's like, what do you know about this woman? I said, I don't. I'm like, this guy was in Vermont, of all places.
In Vermont. So a Pleiadian? I mean, they could be from anywhere, these tall people.
Yeah, I asked him a couple of questions. I've yet to hear back his answers, but... she could be from anywhere, but at 7'6", there's no current record of any Earth human that's 7'6" tall. I think the tallest Earth human these days, as he was indicating, is 7'3". So here we have the 7'6" tall woman with wavy blonde hair walking through a grocery store in Vermont of all places.
What did she have in her basket? I want to know that, you know.
Probably a lot of steaks. I don't know.
Probably a couple of cabbages and a lettuce, you know. Yeah. I don't get how you Earth people eat this shit. Anyway, so that's right. Fabulous. Yeah, and we've also met a gentleman called Audrey Ewis. Have you heard of Audrey Ewis?
Only from you.
All right. Well, he's got a regular show now on and he's down at North Dakota. At the Standing Rock.
No kidding. Wow.
Being quite the hero, let me say. We all love him dearly, and we hope he's going to be all right, but he's right in the front now.
Tashina has been volunteering there for months now, and she works in the medic tent at Standing Rock. And as she's indicated, matter of fact, the first hour and 15 minutes that she spoke, it was a complete report in terms of what's going on in Standing Rock. And that was current as of October the 21st or 22nd when she spoke. So we heard quite a bit of detail in terms of what she learned, what she observed, what she was seeing happening in Standing Rock. She also brought some video footage as well and showed it.
Well, we got earlier today, I spoke to Audrey and, he gave me, basically, he did a download dump of what happened.
Tell me.
All the things that happened in the, that has been reported in the news and is, you know, just obviously slanted by the whole thing. Essentially that the police, of course, were making, making all the chaos. You know, they were the ones who were setting fire to things with the flashbangs. And they could have used putting water cannons on people, where they could easily have, you know, put the fires out using the water cannons that, you know, that's the thing. Something like they torched a truck or something and it was being used as a blockade to stop people getting into the camp. So they had to take a 45-minute detour. So by taking that van out of the way, that truck out of the way, it would have opened up access for emergency services and things like that. That was the thinking behind it. What else? I'm trying to download. I put it on my YouTube channel.
Sure.
and we've been playing it, you know, all day, so we're all up to speed on it at the moment.
Yeah. I hope that there's that ultimately there's a positive resolution, and that somehow this pipeline does not go through. Now, I've said this before, but it bears worth saying again. This stand is about the pipeline, but it's also not about the pipeline. This stand that they're taking, they're essentially saying, no more. This is it. We're drawing the line in the sand. We will not be silenced again. That's what's going on. That's why it's bigger than the pipeline.
I think that's the essence of this.
Yep.
It's much more, you know, that's why everybody's looking at this.
That's right.
This is the point where human bodies meet the machine of the military, industrial, death, pharmaceutical, chemical, human trafficking, operation paperclip, industrial complex.
For untold years.
For millennia. It's the old empire.
Right.
It's the Orion Empire. It's the, right. And you were saying, you know, you're talking about Rome. This is, Rome is a microcosm of the empire, and fall it will, and fall it must, and this is the last, the last fall, and this is what the whole, Lyran Wars was about, because when people invaded the Lyrans, it was a mistake, because Lyrans are great at, you know, whatever you give them, they'll mirror you. There you go. So you give them war, we'll show you war. We'll show you what we can be like if you make us into war. So don't make us into war. That's not a good idea. You won't like me when I'm angry.
No.
you won't like us when we are angry as an entire, right. You know, sort of thing. And what happened?
You're accurate to describe that plurality, because from what I understand, there are hundreds of people indigenous people among the thousands of Native Americans. There are hundreds of indigenous nations that are representing their people from around the globe that are joining together with the Lakota and saying, never again will we be silenced. That's what it's all about. All those broken treaties, no more.
Yeah, and broken treaties is exactly the same as what the Greys and the Reptilians do as well. Again.
Mm. Do we detect a pattern here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, because it's the same thing. You know, we have to look at it. This is the last hour of the last day of the last year of the never-ending war. It's got to come sometime, and it's now. You know, and we're making it happen. We're decreeing it, so no more.
No more.
Stop it. Just stop it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, to paraphrase, somebody said, you know, they had it right in the 60s. Make love, not war. And
exactly.
they weren't being literal, but the meaning behind it was literal. It means love your friends, you know, your brothers, your sisters, you know, and the kind of love that is universal, that's cosmic, that says essentially, even though we may have some differences, I accept you for who you are and I embrace you.
Yeah, it's about wanting other people to die. If you stop wanting other people to die, then your life starts getting a lot better. It's really, really very, very interesting to observe, because everything like hatred and jealousy is about wanting the other to die. Basically the thing is, if only you were to die and go away, I would feel all right. So go away and die. You know, I don't care. Don't come back. You know, that's it. Bye bye. You know, and that feeling is that's the root of much evil.
Well, we've got a long way to go. There are a lot of wonderful people on this planet, and then there are a lot of people who are not so nice, but you know, each person has a right to evolve at his or her own pace to whatever degree they're going to evolve and awaken. And I just feel blessed that I've learned what I've learned, that I'm part of the awakening process, and someday soon the Yanks will come to the UK and we will do a conference with you, my friend.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Yes.
Wouldn't that be super cool? And you know, I've got the PA system. You know,
okay.
So all I need is transport. I need somebody to pick me up or hire me a van and I'll come and do it. And I'll talk, you know, I can even talk about stuff if you want.
Yeah.
I'm not guaranteeing that I might say anything interesting, but you know.
Yeah, well. would the,
people can come and smell me, you know.
Yeah, right, fresh off the peat bog.
Yeah. I smell of, you know, northern farmland and,
yes.
And heather and moss. Anyway, go on.
Mm. Would you do it in Glasgow or would you go down to England? Have you thought about where you would hold it?
No.
No? Okay.
No, you know, I'm completely open. And I'm happy for it to expand, you know, make it work for everybody. Hey, listen, let's put on a tune. I'm going to put on some Bob Marley because he's very unifying. And this is called One Foundation. So that's very unifying too. See you in a minute. 3 minutes and 43 seconds later. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. Oh yes, you're welcome back to Wolf Spirit Radio, Ever Beyond Radio, the show Ever Beyond, with the host JP, that's me. Tonight I'm speaking with Tolek, very much boots on the ground here in the planet of the crossing. We're right in the time of the crossing, and like we were saying before, all of these things are coming together. We have to finish this. We have to get it all clear. The war.
It's all on our shoulders too.
That's right. We have to come up a really neat solution to the whole thing. That's what we're here for. We are like an enormous computer designed to solve the problem of the great question of life, the universe, and everything, which is, why do we have war? Think on that, lovelies. That's the great question, isn't it?
That's a valid question.
Yeah. Where did it all come from? So, can it be stopped? You know, what's it all about? So, to this end, we were tasked. this is the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, really.
That's right.
That's the story of it. You know, this is a computer and we play out all the scenarios between humans and reptilians so that we can figure out how humans and reptilians can possibly potentially coexist and live in the same space without being at each other's throats, you know, within seconds, just because.
First they have to stop thinking of us as, ignorant cows. They've got to stop thinking of us as a natural resource. That's step one, and that's on their shoulders.
That's gonna be difficult because, you know, we still have the issue that cows are also.
We have to
learn that compassion in order to show them this is how we can become compassion. So maybe we have to, demonstrate in some way, okay, all right, we're gonna show you. This is how you do it. We are going to give up cows and we're going to treat them with honor like the Indians do. You know?
Right. Right. Yes.
Perhaps this is why they do that.
Mm.
That's a thought.
Good point.
Mmm. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Moo-hoo.
Uh-huh. I see, said the wise man.
Yeah. So yes, and of course, you know, we have to, you know, us, particularly the Pleiadian Lyrian, sort of traumatized, you know, we just kill anything that's green, kind of, bent, have trouble accepting the reptilian, arrogant, you know, bulldozery, in your face, rather annoying kind of, qualities. Really. And it's hard because, you know, just want a bit of peace.
Right. Peace and quiet.
Peace and quiet. You know, bloody noisy reptoids. Yeah. So here's the thing. Or maybe to make our own noises, you know, which are subtle. You know, it's like, imagine somebody's learning to play, a piano and there's a rock band in the same room. You know, it's not easy.
Good point. I have some of my most poignant moments are when I've been out, you know, walking in the Southwest desert, or when I've been swimming in the waves, and things come to me, knowledge comes to me that I wouldn't ever expect or plan on. And in terms of vibratory rate, like heightened vibratory rate, some of the most incredible moments, because I during this conference, to make a specific reference, I played on Sunday afternoon, right at the beginning of the closing ceremony. Kathy Wilkutz, who is the last scheduled speaker, Kathy, who is, Wawapisinawin is her Lakota name from the Cheyenne River Reservation. She normally has her husband play for the audience prior to her speaking. And he could not make this trip. So, she asked me if I would play. So I played two recent songs that I had produced. And it was, I think, only the second or third time that I had played in public before. And I could, right in the middle of the first song, I was keenly aware of this like high vibratory buzz happening in my body. I'm not playing the drums. I'm not playing a loud electric guitar or a bass. I'm playing a flute. So not only is it a flute that's a woodwind instrument, you know, I'm evoking the sound because I'm controlling the sound that's coming into this instrument and it's being released. And I was breathing in between playing these different notes. And my point is, I was very, very aware of this sort of heightened vibratory rate that I was experiencing from playing the flute. And it felt different than when I play it alone. It's hard to describe. When I play it alone, I'm in solace and quietude, either out in nature or in my place. It's a completely different feeling. Playing in public was decidedly different. I don't know what it means yet, but it was quite an experience that I remember quite well.
That was it. That's the point. That's why people sit on stage. That's the thing. It's the zone. You know, you get to the zone where you're so in tune with the moment. Mm. That
good description.
Every movement that you make is actually pushing the moment forward and driving the moment and directing the moment.
Wow.
So that's the, you know, you're feeling, you know, the ripples coming out from you. And it's a really strange thing to be on stage because it's the quietest place in the room.
Oh, yeah. You could hear. I noticed that. I was like, it was in between breaths.
Yeah. Because you're making all the sound of the room.
Right.
You know, you can't hear anything back. It's just like,
no, that's right.
It goes out and there's nothing coming back. It's very strange.
And yeah, there was that exact moment when I went, oh crap, they're all listening to me. You know, it just like lasted that long. I'm like, oh. And I'm like, no, just keep playing. Just breathe. Just keep playing.
That's right.
Yeah. It was pretty intense.
It's a very odd feeling. It's something I'm used to now, but, it's like running a radio station because talking into a tape recorder, you never know who's going to be listening to this in the future.
Yeah, well said. I have an aligned but completely different story. I mentioned Michael Brown. Michael is going to be speaking at the Hawaii event that I'm going to be having. Michael spoke on Sunday of the conference, and I had heard him speak once before in Pagosa Springs. Michael is a very unique individual. He's a clinical psychotherapist, had been involved in the profession for many years in hospital settings, in long-term, what they would call mental health settings. He said, you name it, he's seen it. Psychopaths, what do they call that when there's two or three people in one body?
Multiple personality.
Yes, multiple personality. All of it. Yeah. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cases. Well, Michael's been living, in Arizona for the past, 8 years or so. And he has regressed thousands of people. As I mentioned, he's got about, I'm not sure if it was 12 or 16 very distinct cases of Earth humans who absolutely know that they're originally not from this planet. And so he told some of those stories during his speech. One of the more fascinating parts of his own story is that when he was in college, he had not one, not two, not four, not 12. He had 44 out-of-body experiences. Wait, check that. He had 43 out-of-body experiences where he was very conscious of the fact that he either went to bed or he laid down for a nap and pops out of his body, goes scooting out through the window or through the brick, goes under the pavement, goes up in the clouds, goes through maple trees. He went down in a basement. He's telling all these stories. Those 43 stories when he was in college. And the 44th story is the one that was the most unique. Michael to this day is still a drummer. He was playing in a band that had become pretty big, and it was during the time of the Moody Blues. And he was their drummer. And he was playing during the two-thirds mark of this concert. And you know how when there's a song that's happening and songs have their own life and crescendo, there's a moment where they climb and then sort of peak. Well, at the peak of this particular song, while Michael's playing the drums, he leaves his body. There's 7,000 people in his auditorium listening to the band play. And it's got this sort of rhythmic, of course, as the drummer, he's setting the rhythm to the song. And at the two-thirds mark, right at the peak of the song, he leaves his body. And he said he went out through his head, and he went out across the hall, and he went to the far end of the hall, and he was watching the whole audience and the band and watching himself play. He's like, this is wild. And he had this brief thought. He's like, crap, what if I drop my sticks? Boom, back in his body.
That's always the one. It's like, boom. And suddenly you're not a spiritual being anymore. Isn't that interesting? What if?
Yeah, yes. What if? Some form of fear. Bap, right back in his body. He hasn't had one since.
The hell's in my... Well, I mean, that's, yeah, wow. Okay.
Yeah, amazing story.
Dissociation. So listen, we have a question from Sage Wizard. Lots of wizards in the room today, I have to say. There's lots of different flavors of wizards, and this one's sage flavor. I have a question for Tolek. Have you had any experiences of speaking to the Council of the Federation of when roughly Earth will move into 5D?
Well,
when,
yeah,
as, when the old when,
right?
Yeah, but
right.
Anyway, we had to ask it,
why
is the sky blue?
Here we go. Here's the short version. As I've said many times since March of 2014, when I learned in great detail, because I was being talked to. They were bringing me up to date, so to speak. They basically said
they were schooling you.
Yeah, they're schooling me. And I didn't choose to ask before then. So I asked and I got an earful. And the answer is there are a number of changes that will take place not only in deep space as they are happening right now, because this solar system, what people don't know is that actually space moves. This solar system. This galaxy is moving through space, and it's moving into an area and has moved into an area of very, very dynamic, higher energy, higher frequency area of space. And it's not only more dynamic because of energy and frequency and vibration and magnetism, it also has a lot more space junk, rocks, asteroids, meteors, etc. At the peak of all of the height of cosmic activity in space as it affects Earth, at the peak of all of the possible Earth changes that will occur on this planet, at the peak of human intellectual knowledge, at the peak of human social consciousness and what we would today call spiritual awareness, at that moment, this world will transform and become a higher dimensional world. I've been told its first iteration will be mid-level 4D, like 4.5, 4.6. And we will exist for some indeterminate period. And when it's appropriate that we're ready to become 5D, a 5D world, then will we become a 5D world? So, the question is not about when, it is about what confluence of events happen that all reach their apex at once. That's how it will happen. Date to be determined. Do I believe the transformational shift of this world is going to happen in a couple of years, a few years? I do, based on what's going on today, but I don't have any date, and I don't know when it'll happen. That is the full answer.
So, soon.
Now, keep in mind, soon is a four-letter word.
Soon is a four-letter word. I love it. I always, because I have these communications with me guides, and they say, oh, soon. And, right. You know, you don't know what time perspective they're talking from, you know, because if your day, like Alex Cully was saying, if your day is 1/33rd of theirs,
that's right.
Then, you know, what does a year mean? That's like a long time. That's like more than lifetimes, you know.
I've said this before, but it's worth repeating for context. I was having this conversation with the gentleman who's the commander of the Primary Andromeda Council Biosphere, and I had asked this question over many lifetimes. And I said, I need to ask this question from a different perspective, yours. You guys have said that I'm part of your race of people from Dakota. He's like, yes. And that I've been coming down to this planet for what you would calculate to be, in Earth terms, 75,000 years. Am I saying that right? And he's like, yes. I said, okay, now, from your perspective, using Earth terminology, how long does it feel like I've been gone? And I'm kind of looking for an approximation, but how long does it feel to you guys that I've been traveling back and forth from the Andromeda Council Biosphere and other places out in space over the course of 75,000 years? How long does it feel to you? You're using Earth terminology. He went, And so he flashed me some pictures, and he's like, think of it as like a year and a half business trip. I'm like, what? So I've been coming down to this planet, or, you know, slices of my soul, called spiritual essence, has been coming down to this planet for 75,000 years. And to them, it feels like I've only been gone for a year and a half. How's that for a different perspective?
Oh man, now that's a bit mind blowing.
Yeah.
That's a bit mind blowing and a bit annoying because like, because right. to them, right, from their perspective, you're getting stupider. I'm not being mean about this, but like the longer you spend on Earth, the more you forget and the more stupid you become. And you like keep making mistakes because you can't remember,
you know, right.
It's like the goldfish experience, you know, and, you keep forgetting things and like, it's like trying to hold all the things that you need to hold in your head at any one time is impossible for this frame to hold. It's like, you know, it's not got enough dimensions in it. It's like an early version or something. Or maybe a jumper down version. It may be that we could pull out a few jumpers. These are little things that come on a circuit board that limit the, just for the listeners here, that limit the capability of a computer. It's called a jumper. It's a little, tiny little thing.
Yeah, little thing. Switch.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically we've been jumpered down by, you know, certain parts of our brain have been, taken out of circuit. So they can't remember too many things at once. And this is what I seem to be.
Purposeful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Except that that's certainly true, but as I am finally learning in this lifetime, I believe the best parts of me have been, the best parts of me have revealed themselves when I am allowing my intuition and my heart to parenthetically drive the bus to make decisions for this body. And I've been doing it pretty well over the past 5-6 years. Now, that doesn't mean I don't make mistakes. Of course I still make mistakes. I'm human. But what I am saying is that instead of leading with my mind and using the analytics of my mind to figure out what decisions I should be making, I'm doing just the opposite. I'm leading with my intuition, leading with my heart, leading with my feelings, and I double check those decisions with my mind. And I gotta tell you, to use a cricket or a baseball term, my batting average is about 90% when I'm following my intuition. And I can tell you there are a few times when I've gone, I'll do this anyway, you know, because my brain will rationalize that I can do it and figure it out. Those are the times I goof, that they just don't play out the way I would have liked. So I would ask people to at least consider that. Knowing things is important, but as you go through your life on a day-to-day basis, whatever you do, lead with your heart. And if you're not happy with certain situations and you do your best to change them, make sure that at worst you are neutral with your words. If there's anger, that you don't lash out or lash out. You don't lash out at people. It's important for people to feel their anger, to feel their frustration, but do the best possible not to lash out at people and vent your anger at other people. Those are just part and parcel of being spiritually aware, spiritually mature, being aware of your own intuition, using inner guidance. I don't know if that's helped.
I totally agree. This is the way I'm becoming more and more, not intellectually driven, but, what does this feel right? This felt, no, let's go this way, you know, and
right.
learning really to, I mean, there's a kind of, what's the word? Escalation? Is that the word?
Yeah, it happens.
Feeling that, you know, if you're going down the wrong road, you'll sense a resistance. Mm-hmm. And things will go wrong. And I was talking to my friend today and I was saying that my feeling is that if you go down the wrong road, you'll encounter resistance. Now, sometimes resistance is necessary and you need to overcome that. But once you've overcome it and it's still being resistant, then you realize that it's not one of those lessons, it's the other one, which is like, you know, have to know when to stop.
Right, that's right.
Those are the, you know, the lessons of when is enough enough. And, you know, with these things these days, enough is very quick. I know this road. I'm going to just, bye. You know, that kind of, very quickly, reverse out of the situation.
I may not remember the specifics, but there have been many moments in my life as a younger man when I have, for lack of better words, forced something to make it work. It's not going to work. I can tell you categorically because I've done it enough. Whenever I've tried to force something, it backfires one way or another, or it's going to break. A week or two down the road, something's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, I mean that you can't push a river, as they say here.
Pardon?
You can't push a river.
No. No. Yeah.
And, go on.
My mom forever has said, go with the flow. You know, just go with the flow. It'll make your life a lot easier. I'm finally learning that.
Well, there you go. I've got to answer this thing in the chat room because somebody says, you're not looping the same thoughts. So I said, you know, this is something that I've done is, you know, if you've got looping thoughts, you write them down. Whatever's going on, you know, if you've got a whole load of what if situations, write them down and allow your body to, you know, in writing them, it brings it through your body and think, and you can, your body can actually say, rubbish, you know. But if they stay in your brain, looping, there's no grounding. They have equal validity.
Oh, just keep cycling.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. There's a guy I know who called it the monkey mind.
Oh yes, the monkey mind. Yeah.
You know, I would do that just for. I seem to have an active mind, and when I'm doing work like this, preparing for a conference or working on any project. It means my mind is active and I'm trying to produce instances or circumstances or find the right pieces. And if I'm playing tennis or I'm swimming somewhere and I got this idea, I will hop out of the water or I'll, you know, run to the blanket. I'll pull it. These days I always carry a pen and some pieces of paper and I go and I write it down and I have to carry it around in my mind.
Exactly. Keep it clean.
Yeah, I'm a relatively bright guy, but it means I don't have to clutter my mind with a bunch of stuff. And so that's been, I know those tools are simple, but for people that carry around iPads and iPods and all sorts of things, you can do that as well. You know, just have a little note thingy and just take notes.
Send yourself a text message.
Yeah, it's a great way to get rid of the clutter.
Yeah, email yourself. Great procrastination. Right. I'll just email to that so a later version of who knows how to deal with this crap.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so, dealing with doubts, dealing with the self-doubt that you must have had during your lifetime, you know, was what I experienced real? Was I, you know, and the doubts that other people put into your mind. I mean, you're on the other side of anything like that now, aren't you?
You know, honestly, in order to be able to organize and produce that conference, had to be.
Yeah.
And it's
a mantle.
It's a really good illustration because I had never done it before. I had been, people had requested that I be a speaker during my corporate career. People requested that I speak at conferences last summer and this summer, but this is the first time I did it myself. And here's what I went on. I said, okay, I'm a bright guy. I can figure this out. I need to have some help. I know how it should be structured, and there were all sorts of other considerations. The reason that this thing was successful, other than my intention, because I knew that I clearly intended to be, that it should be of the highest good, bring speakers in of the highest vibration so that they would help enlighten, help educate, bring people up to date, all of those appropriate thoughts. ultimately, I believe that it was successful because I said, I have faith and trust that this is all going to work out. That's literally what I went by. I just started the process. I built the website, and I did some research to figure out how I should price it. And I didn't price it the lowest. I didn't price it the highest. I priced it kind of like right in the middle. And I did all this work, all this research to prepare and get it ready. But ultimately, I went forward based on faith and trust. And there were some moments. There were some moments toward the end that were like 3 or 4 weeks before the conference. And I was almost at the break-even point where I knew that if I got X number of speakers, if I got X number of attendees, once I hit that threshold, after that moment, I would be able to put money in my pocket. There would be some extra left over. In this society, they call it profit. But there were 3 or 4 weeks right before the conference where I was like, oh boy, this thing's getting dicey. Right at the 3 minute mark, right at the 3 week mark, from 3 weeks until 2 days before the conference, I sold $6,000 worth of tickets. Like bang, 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 bang. People started buying all these tickets. I was like, wow, my faith and trust paid off. And I can tell you categorically that I wrote a check for $5,500 and change just to the hotel alone. For speakers, hotel rooms, and a whole bunch of other fees. It's a dicey proposition when you do a conference and you've got speakers. What I've learned is the appropriate thing is you pay them a speaker fee, which I did. You pay for their airfare round trip to wherever the conference is being held, ground transport, and you pay for their hotel room. That adds up quick. There's a lot of money that's going out the door. So I knew that there was going to be a lot of money flowing out. I didn't know how much would be flowing in. And again, here's the point. I had to have faith and trust that it was going to be okay. The words failure or we're not going to make it never came into my mind at all. I didn't even go there.
Excellent. No doubts.
And I'm telling that story simply as an illustration. It's a really good illustration to show people what someone can accomplish. And I'd never done this before. I'd never done it before on my own. I mean, yes, I'd help, but I organized it. I promoted it. I built the website. I sold the tickets. I collected the reservations, paid all the vendors. I just had faith and trust that it was going to work out okay, and I did it for the highest and best intent. So that's a really good working model to show people.
There you go.
See what you can do.
Yeah.
With intention, with focus, and with, I guess to a degree, fearlessness.
Exactly. Or lovefulness.
Yes, that too.
Because that's what it's about. What's the opposite of, you know, what is fearlessness? It's lovefulness.
Right. Lovefulness, yeah. Yes.
And, yeah. It's like, I was just going to say, it looks like it's your new career and, you've already got 2 gigs lined up. So, you're doing all right.
Well, yeah. I ran the numbers today and I went, cause I'm like, I know how much money I have to put out to retain the hall. Do you know what it costs to fly speakers from the U.S. to Australia?
I can imagine.
I took a breath and I went, it's going to be okay. People came to the first conference. They'll come to the other two. There will be cash flow to pay for these things. I'll be all right. But it's still, it gave me pause for thought. Believe me. I'm like, I'll be all right. It'll be okay.
It's a large volume.
Yes. It's, yeah. Yeah. But, as a friend of mine is known to say, thank the goddess or thank the gods. I'll be fine. It'll be okay.
That's all right. We're on first name terms with the gods these days.
That's right. Yeah.
So, okay. So, there were real ETs there.
Yes, oh, were, yes, yeah. And actually.
So you had your lady from Arcturus.
Yes.
And who else can you talk about? Because there are obviously some that don't want to be known about quite yet, but they are coming into the domain, aren't they?
Well, the lady from Arcturus, Tashina, said categorically, and she said it in private conversation with me. She could have said it on stage, but she said, "Oh, Tolik, you know, like, as I've gone to, excuse me, the Star Knowledge Conference and other conferences, I've met not hundreds, but thousands of people who are from other worlds. Now they're human, they're cosmic human, but they're human, who are here on Earth because of the import, because of this moment in time." Sorry for that word, but it's because there is so much going on here at this confluence of events in the history of our planet. This is like the big one. Big, huge. What's going to be, what is happening and what is going to happen has never happened on other planets. It'll be the first time that a race of people, plurality, races of people on one world will go from being 3D organic human to becoming mid-level 4D higher dimensional humans without having to die. It's going to be a literal transformation process. So there are a whole bunch of beings in a galaxy watching this. I should say a whole bunch of beings from the cosmos that are watching us and beings that have come here and beings that are higher energy that take organic form. They can manifest organic form to be here and watch this process, watch this show. So we're lucky to be here for this time, for this moment.
Yeah, that's what they keep telling me. Anyway.
And I also, yeah, I know.
Yeah. No, just kidding.
I also understand, I had quite a few gifted people walk up to me and they're like, "Hey, Tolik." Like, "Yeah." "There's like a really, really, really big ship over this hotel right now." I'm like, "Yeah, I know." And there was this gentleman from Tucson who walked up to me and said, "Do you know how big the ship is?" I'm like, "No." He said, "It's 1200 feet in diameter." I'm going around. So they were paying attention. We were being watched. Yeah, that's big. Of course, cloaked, nobody could see it. A number of people could feel it.
Wow. So, yeah, I heard that, yeah, there were ships and all sorts of beings turned up as a kind of confluence moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So look, Anne of America says, "Tolik, I have had dreams of my higher self presenting composed new laws, so to speak, from several different species. The council was sitting around a horseshoe table. Could this council in my dream be the Andromedan Council?" The species were looking something like something from Star Wars.
Yeah.
So presumably all mixed up.
Yeah, there are a number of council chambers, and for the record, here on Earth are known as the Andromeda Council, but by the ambassadors and different diplomats from the many races that attend the different council meetings, it's known in deep space as the Galactic Council. So that's A. I learned just recently, like within the past 3 to 4 months, that this Galactic Council is in fact a council of councils. So the Sirius A star system is a senior member of the Andromeda / Galactic Council. It is the Sirian Council representative that sits at the Andromeda Council table. It is the senior Arcturian ambassador from the Arcturian star system that sits at the Andromeda / Galactic Council table. It is a council of councils. So I'm not sure which council that she was participating in, but I'm sure if they were providing common sense laws to be considered for planet Earth post-transformation, probably quite possible that it was at least one of the councils that's part of the Andromeda Council / Galactic Council. Quite possible.
I see. So,
simply because there's so many councils out there.
Yeah. So there's a kind of, multidimensional outwardly rippling kind of like a solar system kind of thing. So,
and good point because we've got, I don't know, like a handful, if you will, of 3D organic races that are part of the Andromeda Council. But the bulk of them are 4D through 9D. The Arcturian representatives are 9D. So you've got 5D, 6D, 7D, 8D, 9D people. That beings, if you will, that all participate in this Galactic Council. So it's a kind of, as I've learned, it's truly a council of councils.
Right. And so, I mean, how close is that Star Wars Jedi Council thing going on? Or is it more like the, it's not like the enormous, the parliament that they had, where they're all floating about in these little discs things, hovering discs.
Star Wars.
Yeah. It's more like the, you know, the Jedi Council where there are representatives from all the different races, but they were in touch with their collectives. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, they do. Yeah, they do and they can because once you get into the higher dimensions, non-organic, everything from 4D up, they're all telepathic. As my friend Thomas Hughes would say, mind speak. They can all communicate mind to mind. Then predominantly that's how they do it. And they're not hearing through their ears. They're not speaking through their mouths. They're doing it from one person's mind to the next.
I think we should have webinars where this is taught. You know, maybe we should get some. Oh, we know an extraterrestrial or two, don't we?
Yeah.
Because, you know, the CIA, they had Greys to teach them telepathy, didn't they?
I don't know.
Well, according to some whistleblowers. Oh, by the way, this is some very breaking news, from Audrey through a friend. Over 60 policemen have quit
as a result of
Standing
Rock
situation, yeah. So.
Well, for people of conscience, for people of good conscience, it becomes very easy to see when wrongs are being done against other people.
It does.
And it's, yeah.
So we're actually putting out support. We have the address to send stuff to. One of the things that Audrey was saying is that, and it's, in a way, it's been a catalyst to something because it's been something he's been talking about passionately for the last few months. He's talking about the Ubuntu Society, you know, whatever you might call it, but the Society of Goodwill.
Hmm.
And that's exactly what he reported on last night when I had a conversation with him. That's what's happening at Standing Rock. They've created a moneyless, cashless, positive, energetic society there. Out of necessity.
I heard, I don't remember her name, but I heard this young woman reporting from Standing Rock a couple of weeks ago. And what she essentially said was, we are being attacked, we're being abused, there are all sorts of wrongs being, you know, perpetrated on us, but we are not reacting with violence. We are not reacting with fear. We are simply turning around and loving these people that are, you know, policemen or whatever roles that they have that are trying to enforce this pipeline going through. She said, it is our goal to love the people that are trying to deal with us. And I thought that was profound. Very, if you will, very Gandhi-esque.
There's a lot of that energy abounding right now, because this is what we need. The world needs peacemakers. The galaxy, the cosmos needs peacemakers.
Yes.
We need no more war makers. We don't need that anymore. Nobody got time for that stuff anymore. So
it's a busted model.
Yeah.
It doesn't work, never has.
Yeah.
And it's only been used to enslave people.
Yeah.
The whole process of war is about making money and managing the population on the planet. It's, you know, if you boil it down, that's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So I you may have read it and I know it's more than, you know. Anyway, so thank you for turning up today, Tolek. I know you just like that, just a happened chance to contact me about something in the future.
Yeah, I saw you pop up and we hadn't talked in a while. Uh-huh. He's my buddy.
Yeah, so I thought, there we go. And it's been good. It's been really good. It's been, it's quite a momentous moment, if you like. Momentous?
It is.
No, it's monumental. That's the word, not momentous.
But it's also auspicious.
It's auspicious, yes.
You know, and you're right. When you said Brexit, yeah. I think Brexit was the very first indication of, no, we're not going to play this game anymore.
Yeah.
Period.
Exactly. Thank you for putting it into words, finally, yes. Because that's what's been hanging over it. That's right. What's been hanging over all of us is like, we know that there comes a time when we all have to step on the brake all at the same time and say, that's it. All right. Enough is enough. Right. We've played your game. Thank you very much. Silly game. How about this one?
It ain't working.
Yeah.
I'm getting off this bus.
That's right. And here we are. And here we are, like,
and there are more.
Everybody's kind of smacking up against the front of the bus, you know. But it has to happen. We all, you know, everything has to come to a halt and to take stock and like, oh, really? So that's what's been going on, you know, cause it's not what you think it's been.
No, not at all. No, not at all. And as I mentioned, there's more coming. If these are profound moments, there are even more profound moments coming.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that's what the movement from 3D, 3.9 to 4D, 4.5 is. There are a series of moments where you have to embrace a higher truth, a larger truth. You know, it's no longer God and the devil. It's aspects of the one. You know, it's no longer, Russians versus Americans. It's no longer North Cambodia, Vietnam versus South Cambodia, Vietnam. Whatever it is, it's all divide and rule. And guess whose ploy that is? The Orion Empire. You know, right. Same thing. Same old story. Tired.
It's been 3 years.
Tired old story. And the thing is, people still fall for it. This is the problem. And so this is the lesson, is you must not fall for the sparkly doogly. You know, the dangling the keys in front of you and saying, ah, sparkly, sparkly, sparkly. Look over here.
And we can start another war engine and distract everybody.
Yeah.
Hasn't happened yet.
Or we could dismantle the tanks and make them into tractors and make them into the best earth moving, ground preparing, devices that you could imagine. Wouldn't that be better? You know,
well, I got a good idea. Let's overhaul the whole automotive industry and make clean engine cars.
Exactly.
Electric or otherwise.
Exactly. Not only that.
Oil.
Yeah.
Even, don't need to burn oil.
Exactly. And before long, we won't even need roads because we won't have wheels because we won't
right.
touch the ground. And then the whole world can be a very pleasant place because we'll be flying over grass. You know, pathways made of grass. And that's what the ley lines are. Ha ha ha. Aren't they? They just go up and down. They go in a straight line between place to place. And people would wonder, why are they like that? Because they're clear. You know, they're clear so that you could fly a thingy, a Vimana.
Right, yes, because a lot of the craft are known to fly over the high energy.
Yeah.
Right over the high energy areas.
Yeah. Which are on the ley lines.
Yeah.
I was in the Southwest Desert one time sitting on my back deck. And I watched this ship. It went bloop, bloop, bloop. It was jumping. If they're physical craft, they fly in a straight line. You know, whether it's a plane or something, or jet or something else. But this thing, you could tell, was jumping from one time point in space to another. It was like, blink in, blink out. Blink in, blink out. Like, wow, he's having fun. He was just making tracks going across the sky.
Good.
But he was up there. He was, I mean, not quite at 12, but he was right around somewhere between 10 and 11. Just kind of like, it was amazing to watch. If you live like you do, if you live way, way out in the country and there are no lights, you can see all sorts of things going on.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Speaking of which,
I live near a thing. Go on.
Yeah.
I live near air bases called RAF Lossiemouth. So I actually get physical jets that, you know, fly over. And it's not because I'm special or that I emit things. It's because I'm in the flight path. It's fine. The flight path hasn't changed because I live here.
It's still the same
flight path. But anyway.
So any interesting sightings? Anything? Unique?
I've never seen a UFO. All I see aurora and, meteors and very natural phenomena. It's just that I have all these feelings that I have to address that that's not from this planet. You know, that sort of stuff. That's,
sure.
And I get, you know, regret. So, but linked into this, all right? So this is a great question from Mirthling. For those of us who presently have the funds to be regressed by a pro, is self-regression doable? Thank you. And if so, how? Yeah, it's a good question.
Can you self-regress yourself? Well, I have a process that I use when I'm trying to quiet my mind, and if I'm just naturally not tired and I just want to, you know, quiet my mind right before bed, I have a process whereby I'll just start counting back from 299, 298, 297, and I may get 3 or 4 cycles of 299, 298. Well, I suppose if I continued that process and talked my way through it, I could probably, you know, tell myself as I'm stepping myself down, I could probably, you know, step myself down long enough and deep enough but see, I don't know. That's really tough. Because guys that are really good regressionists, if they want people to go deep in theta, they take 20 to 30 minutes to step them down. This is what Michael does. Michael Brown in Sedona. He's one of the best in the country. It takes a long time to do it, and he makes sure they're very, very deep to the point where they're in their subconscious. They're in their spirit self. It's the best way to say it. You know, I don't know. I don't know if it's doable. I could try it. But I really don't know the answer.
I have some suggestion. You concentrate on the feeling. You have a dream where you think, you know, this may be a past life. Go into that feeling again. Just because you can always remember the feeling of the dream, And that's what it's all about. It's all about the feeling. And that's where your memories will be. Because the feeling is a symbol. Like you were talking about earlier, Tolek, about giving you a symbol instead of a sort of a sentence of answer. And that's what dreams do. They give you a feeling that is the symbol of the answer. So you use the feeling. It's a feeling's like a zip file. It's got all sorts of, it's got videos, it's got books, it's got, you know, cartoons, all sorts of stuff.
That's true. That's true. Yeah,
so,
yeah, when they communicate with me, I have, there are different vibratory rates that I feel, without question.
Hmm.
And you can feel a vibratory rate.
And right now, we have to feel the vibratory rate of this. And you know what that means. We have whacked through 2 hours.
Wow.
Thank you so much, Tolek. It's lovely to speak to you again, mate.
It's been fun. Thanks so much.
Good night, everybody. Beyond.